Nowadays, social media platforms, they are amazing in making people addicted. Slowly, I started to feel something like this. I started to feel being anxious. I started to feel that I'm a loser because I wrote a book on procrastination and I was procrastinating. So procrastination is not a time management issue. It's not about having a better system, but you have the highest level of antidepressant intake there too. Why? Why the most successful people are depressed? And those two tips can truly boost your productivity like for 30, 50%.
We all know a famous brand that says, just do it. And yet we still say, maybe later. Why? On today's show, we have Peter Ludwig, an expert on hacking procrastination, a best-selling author with over 400,000 copies sold. He's the founder and CEO of his company named, guess what? Procrastination.com. In this conversation, you'll uncover three key learnings. Why do we procrastinate? Who procrastinates the most? How do we overcome this tendency? Now, let me tell you a secret. Do you know what is the step one for hacking procrastination? To watch this video now, not tomorrow. Let's go. You had a near-death experience on a
plane. Twice in my life. Lucky man.
I'm glad you're here talking with me. One particularly was on the plane.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what were your thoughts and feelings in that moment?
Yeah. So the first feeling was when I heard the sound. It was very noisy because the engine blew up. Our right engine blew up. So it was very noisy. So that was the first experience, and I was shocked, of course. Like you are thinking like, okay, I'm very unlucky, because if you see the statistics, it's very safe to travel by train, by planes. So the first moment I was shaked, and I had a luck that I sit next to the window. So I saw the fire there. That was the second experience. And the guy next to me, he was like, oh, look at the fire. I was like, thanks, I want to see that. And then the pilot said something like, oh, you maybe noticed that we have a serious emergency. I was like, yeah, we noticed. And it was after the takeoff, like after 15 minutes. So we went back to Amsterdam Schiphol Airport. And those other 15 minutes were the longest, because you truly, truly have no chance to somehow influence your destiny. Normally, you have agency. Yeah? You can exercise. You can change things in your life. But when you are on board and there's fire, what you can do? Like, you can't call your parents. The only decision that I had was that I wear a jacket, and I was thinking, like, should I wear it or not? So I put it off because I was thinking like, okay, if we are going to die, I want to die without a jacket because it could be more painful. So I put off the jacket and I was waiting those another 15 minutes. I tried some mindfulness meditation. I was promising like, okay, if I survive this, I will be a better person, even though I'm not religious that much. So, but that was the moment that I was very religious. And the moment when we landed, wow, a lot of people were crying there. We were hugging. I was hugging a lady next to me. And the pilot came out of his cabin and he shaked the hand with everyone. And that was it. We survived. But those moments when you are facing those difficulties in life, sometimes you are sick. Sometimes your life is threatened. You realize something that is important, because life is not, we are not here forever. Life is finite, life is limited. So for me, this experience helped me a lot with my procrastination, because since then I'm not trying to waste my time on Netflix that much. I'm trying to invest my time on the most meaningful things to me. So that's why I do what I do. So, but you don't need to experience near death experience to realize that your time is the most valuable resource that we all have. So this was very similar to another near death experience, and I hope that those two were last two. Yeah, I already understand. Thanks.
Wow, what an experience! And that deeply, how do you think that experience impacted you as a person?
Well, first of all, near death experience is always humbling experience. So you realize that facing the possibility of your death is not scary. It's a little bit sad. You are like, okay, if it has to end, it has to end. But I realized that I lived amazing life. In the moment that I saw the fire, I was like, okay, now, yeah, it can happen. And I was not sad. I was not scared. I was slightly sad. But when we survived, I realized like, okay, now I have a like next chance to live even a better life. So every new day is a bonus to me. And I'm not scared of death. I'm scared not to live a fulfilled life. So that's why I travel a lot. That's why I'm an entrepreneur. That's why I'm trying to like do meaningful activities every day. And whenever I realize that I'm wasting my time, I'm trying to remind myself that moment to see the fire, to realize, okay, maybe my life can end tomorrow, but I think that I already lived a very fulfilled life, so it can happen. I'm completely okay with that. I'm not scared, but I'm scared not to live a fulfilled life.
And what drives you?
Like in my whole life, you mean? I think that my deepest motivation is to really to somehow help others. And my field is education, because I love to share some useful ideas on how to have a fulfilled life, how to be more focused, how not to be addicted on social media. And truly, the subtitle of the book is how to stop postponing and live a fulfilled life. So somehow fulfilled life is fulfilling me when I help others with that. Mm. Yeah, so my mission or my passion or my purpose is to help others to have their purpose. Mm. So this is the core. And the second part of my work is to simplify science. Like the book is based on more than 100 scientific studies. And my background is in computer science, data science. So I love to read a lot of scientific papers. I love to analyze data and to simplify those studies into few simple pictures that everyone can understand. So simplifying science, and I love the quote that if you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough. So that's why the book has a lot of pictures too. So 100 scientific studies, but 100 simple pictures that can help people to understand those concepts in detail. So this is my mission, like help people to have strong sense of purpose in life and be evidence-based, because you have so many coaches, you have so many like self-help gurus, but they don't base what they are saying on solid science, let's say.
Yeah, so talking about science, so can you explain the science behind procrastination?
Well, if you want to dive into any topic, the first step, what I do is I analyze what is called meta-analysis. So someone already took all the research in the field and make a study based on all those research. So if you read those meta-analysis about procrastination, it seems that the main cause of procrastination is what they called lack of self-regulation. So it means self-regulation, it means that you are unable to overcome negative feelings that you have. So procrastination is not a time management issue. It's not about having a better system, but it's about understanding your own emotions and being able to overcome those negative emotions. So sometimes you procrastinate because the task is too big. So you divide the big task into smaller ones. Sometimes you don't know where to start, so you procrastinate it. So the solution is to ask someone to help, or sometimes we procrastinate because we are perfectionist, and you have those negative feelings when the task is not finished. Maybe you are afraid that you are not perfect yourself. Sometimes we procrastinate because we have, let's say, toxic people around us. A lot of people, they procrastinate in workspace because of toxic bosses, because of toxic culture. So sometimes we procrastinate because we are scared. We are scared of failure. Some people are scared even to be successful. So procrastination is all about emotions. Mm. And about your ability to understand your own emotions. So that's why people with higher emotional intelligence procrastinate less, because they are able to understand their own emotions and somehow cope with them better. People that do mindfulness meditation, they procrastinate less. There is a study that if you procrastinate and if you start to do like 10-minute meditations a day, you can decrease your procrastination because you are more aware of your own emotions. Another technique is truly deploying your strengths, because if you are using your strengths on a daily basis, you enjoy the process much more because you have already higher self-esteem. And if you have higher self-esteem, you are looking forward to do those tasks. So, for example, the better you are, the less you procrastinate, mm-hmm. and the better you become. So that's why the exact opposite of procrastination is what is called a state of flow. Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, very famous psychologist, he uncovered this when he did a very extensive study on top athletes, top business people, top artists, and he asked them where you feel the most fulfilled, and they said during the process. So if you love what you are doing, then you deliver even more results, but you don't care about results. You just enjoy the process. So the exact opposite of procrastination is whenever you are in a state of flow, because time stops for you. You are in a present moment, like us now in this moment. And that's the moment when our brain is active. Yeah, we have higher level of those hormones like serotonin and dopamine. So not just we are focused better, we are more creative, our memory works much better. So you have two states: you procrastinate, you are undermining your self-esteem, you have those negative emotions of regret, and then you have state of flow, you are focused, you are fulfilled. So, and no one is perfect. Yeah, I sometimes also procrastinate, but the idea is to decrease the time of procrastination and increase the time of being in a state of flow.
Okay, so it goes back to the emotions, to self-regulation that you say. Yeah. And the more you are able to work on that, you are able to actually also to manage the situations that comes to you better. And that's why the opposite is flow. Yes, definitely.
Mm. And there are some new studies on sleep. Mm. They call that bedtime procrastination, because whenever you postpone your sleep, whenever you postpone the moment that you go to your bed, when you have a bad sleep, when you are deprived, the next day your self-regulation is lower. Mm. So you procrastinate much more the next day. But the problem is that the more you procrastinate, the more you procrastinate. So the next day, you are unable to, for example, go and exercise. You are unable to eat healthier. So you start to fail in other domains. And what happened is that you procrastinate even more. Mm-hmm. So whenever you want to fix your procrastination, I highly encourage you to fix your sleep first. Mm-hmm. Because the better your sleep is, the less you procrastinate the next day. The better is your self-regulation, so you have stronger willpower, your focus is much better, and you are much more creative and so on. So sleep is crucial for fighting procrastination. And there is a beautiful link between what is called cheap dopamine and procrastination. So nowadays, social media platforms, they are amazing in terms of serving you what you want to see or what you want to hear. And those algorithms, they know you sometimes better than you know yourself. So sometimes, like those algorithms are truly good in making people addicted on what is called cheap dopamine. So, and if you waste your dopamine during the morning, so if you wake up and you scroll for 20, 30 minutes, you drain your dopamine. And since we have one pool of dopamine, if you drain your dopamine on social media, you miss the dopamine during the day. So you are less focused, you are demotivated, and you procrastinate much more. So like the pro tip on fighting procrastination is to have a great sleep and then not to waste the dopamine in the morning. So have a mornings without social media. Okay. And those two tips can truly boost your productivity like for 30, 50%. Those two small little tips.
What do normally people procrastinate the most? What is most common?
Well, I think that another beautiful study on a huge procrastinators, it basically, the outcome of the study was that the people that procrastinate the most are extremely creative and extremely smart. Why the smartest and the most creative people procrastinate the most? Because they are creative and smart even when it comes to come up with excuses in front of themselves. So you can always find the reason why to postpone the task for tomorrow. You can always find the reason why not to start running today, because there is a little cloud and you are like, it might be raining today. So smart and intelligent people procrastinate more because they are better in using their brain and their creativity against themselves. So those, in science, they call this rationalizations. Excuses and excuses in front of ourselves. So that's it. So whatever the task is, when you are smart and creative, you can always find the reason why to do something else.
Wow.
So it was a good news for our listeners. Well, if they procrastinate a lot, they are smart and creative. Yeah.
While you were doing the research for your book, what was the finding that most surprised you?
Well, back then, I was a huge procrastinator by myself. So the first finding that was truly, truly positive to me was that almost 80% of people procrastinate. And I think those 20, they don't have the courage to be honest. So I think that it was like, okay, it's normal. Like everyone procrastinates. It's our, let's say, human, it's a normal state of being a human to procrastinate. There is only one group of people that do not procrastinate, and those are psychopaths. If you do a brain scan to a psychopath, you can find that they have a lesion of amygdala. That's the part of the brain that is about emotion. So basically, they lack emotions. So they lack empathy. But also they are able to like do whatever task because they don't have emotions. So they don't have those negative tasks towards those. They don't have those negative emotions towards those tasks. So basically, they do not procrastinate. So for a psychopath, it's easy to, I don't know, call to someone if it's unpleasant because he or she doesn't know what is unpleasant. So psychopaths, they are rational, but they lack emotions. So they do not procrastinate it much. But there is only 1% of psychopaths in an average society. And according to science, 5% in a C-level of big corporations somehow. I don't know why. No, the reason is that they are able to climb the corporate ladder even faster because they lack empathy, they lack emotions. So that's a problem. So like psychopaths, they do not procrastinate, but all of us the rest, those 98% of people, they have emotions, so they have also struggles with procrastination, because procrastination is all about emotions.
I think that's, the for me, the biggest takeaway for what you're talking about is like procrastination is related to emotions, the way we handle our emotions. And now I'm curious, like, can you tell us like your story about like how did you overcome procrastination?
Well, I make my own system that is described in the book based on those scientific studies, because scientific studies are great when it comes to understand the topic, but you don't have the solution there. You don't have practical tools that you can deploy. So I made my own tools. So for example, one of those tools is called like habit sheet or habit list. So it's based on the research that what works for training willpower is when you do small steps, but daily. So small steps are crucial. You cannot change someone's life from one day to another. Only those big events like near-death experience can change you from one day to another. But usually we don't experience that every day. So, but every day you can be better in small things. So it's a sheet, it's a table, and every day you note down those small steps. So for example, you note down that you did 10 push-ups, that you read three pages of scientific studies, for example, in my case, that you you no doubt when you went to your bed and how many hours you slept. And whenever you focus on those details, those small steps, it's much more sustainable. So there is, again, science behind procrastination, that the long-term solution is what is called micro habits. Micro habits means that focusing on small steps, but being able to sustain those small steps. And whenever you fail, it's very important to get back on track as fast as possible. So if you fail one day, it's very important to not to fail the next day, because then you form a new bad habit if you fail twice, three times. So habits are crucial in terms of fighting procrastination, because we have one willpower. It's here in what is called prefrontal cortex. And good news, procrastination is not inborn. It's not about genes. Mm-hmm. You have identical twins, and one of those twins can be very productive, very positive, and the other can be a huge procrastinator and can be very pessimistic. So it seems that genes, they have some influence on us, but it's not 100%. Sometimes it's less than 20-30%. So those studies on identical twins, the outcome is that procrastination is not inborn. It's more like a bad habit that you can change. So the way to solve procrastination is to deploy those positive habits. As I said, like focus on good sleep. Do not waste your dopamine during mornings with social media. To exercise, like the more you exercise, the less you procrastinate. So there is a connection between exercise and procrastination too, because you can boost your willpower with exercise, and then we have one willpower for other activities. So the more you exercise, the better you are, for example, in other domains that you need willpower for. So they made a research that some salespeople, they started to run, they divided them into two groups. So one started to run, the second group was control, and there was an impact on their numbers at work too. So the more you exercise, the better you are at work too. So those were some tips on that I deployed in my life. And when it worked for me, I'm a huge procrastinator, or I was a huge procrastinator. And I have very deep problems, very big and deep problems to focus. So whatever worked for me usually works for like 99% of people.
So coming back to your book, you wrote a book, you sold 400,000 copies, it's translated into 25 languages. Can you tell us what are the key strategies that you mentioned in the book that can help us to overcome procrastination?
Well, we already discussed the most fundamental ones. And the whole first chapter is about value of time to realize that time is finite, because then you want to live a fulfilled life. When you think that you live forever, you don't have this tension that you want to do something. Because sometimes like people are wasting their time, life, but they are not aware that they are losing something. So the every minute that is wasted forever. And for me, this is scary, but this helps me to motivate myself, because I don't want to like waste the whole day on social media or on Netflix or YouTube or doing something meaningless. No, because it's painful, because you feel that you are losing your time. So that's the first chapter, realizing the value of time. And then purpose in life and at work. Because those long-term studies, they uncovered that the best way for long-term motivation is to have strong sense of purpose, not goals. Because whenever people focus on goals, mm-hmm. the bigger the goal is, it makes you motivated. But when you reach the goal, you experience only short periods of time of satisfaction. And then you get back to the baseline. So they call this, in science again, they call this hedonic adaptation. So when you finish your university, try to guess how many hours or days you are fulfilled. Yes. Some people few hours, in some cases few days, but usually not longer than 1 week. Mm-hmm. So you spend many years studying and then you are few days fulfilled. So goals, they have this amazing or goals that they have this tremendous problem that you can imagine the happiness shortly afterwards, but you can't, your brain can't predict the short lifespan of that happiness. So that's why people that are focused just on goals, they are usually addicted, because they need bigger goals. And they are chasing something, but they are not fulfilled in the long term. So that's the first chapter, and it's about like uncovering your purpose and focus on journey rather than the destination. So if you focus on journey, you are much more fulfilled in the long term, you are much more in a state of flow, and whenever you enjoy the process, you deliver even more results, you deliver more goals, but you don't care about them, you enjoy the process. So that's the first chapter, value of time, intrinsic motivation, and that the path is the destination. The second main chapter is about habits. We already discussed those tiny habits, micro habits, and the courage sometimes to overcome our comfort zones, because sometimes you truly have to act in the right moment. And I have this tool from Professor Philip Zimbardo from Stanford University. He's an amazing guy. I met him 3 times in my life. And he has his project that is called Heroic Imagination. And he works with kids. And he's basically telling them that there are moments of life that you have to act. All summarized, they have a tool that when they were in a situation and when they were put in the moment that they can do a heroic act, they should do that in 3 heartbeats. 3, 2, 1, and then act. Because if you don't do that in 3 heartbeats, your brain overthinks and you always come up with the excuse why not to do that. So if you are passing an accident, 3, 2, 1, and then act. Because if you do not act in those 3 seconds, you maybe become a bystander. And bystander effect, it's truly scary, because sometimes there are so many examples in history that a lot of people were watching, something was happening, some terrible things, and no one acted, because everyone was like, okay, someone else can do that. And there was no one. So everyday heroism is another tool from the book, and it's about training yourself to be a little hero, to start a day with the first alarm clock and not to postpone it. Yeah, sometimes to have the courage to say your opinion when everyone else is silent. Someone is about to face those negative emotions. Like, for example, you have a fear of something, so you go directly and you face the fear. And again, with small steps, because whenever you are able to overcome those fears with small steps, you train the ability to be outside of your comfort zone. Because a lot of people, they are searching for comfort. Yeah, their main goal of life is to have a passive income and financial freedom, and ideally not to work at all. That's not it. Like, the better mindset is to truly enjoy yourself being outside of your comfort zone. So whenever you overcome yourself, then you have that expensive dopamine. Your reward centers are activated, but then you feel fulfilled. So in comfort, we are not growing. Mm-hmm. You have to overcome yourself. So that's why the crucial chapter of the book is about everyday heroism, and it's based on Zimbardo's research. And I'm always trying to like ask myself like, where I can overcome my fears, where I can overcome myself, where I can overcome my comfort zones. So that's why I travel a lot. Traveling helps a lot than being to talk to strangers sometimes. Yeah. You can have amazing, amazing conversation when you talk to someone next to you in airplanes. Mm. Yeah. Because sometimes we are too shy to connect, but I had so many amazing discussions in airplanes. But it's outside of your comfort zone too. So 3, 2, 1, and act.
Well, so much to unpack there. Yeah. Yeah, thank you for sharing. Yeah. For me, so I'm what I'm doing is fully aligned with my purpose, you know. And I can see that, and even like there's certain things that are more aligned to who I am. Certain things that I do are more aligned with what I do and more aligned with that purpose. And those things, I don't procrastinate.
Of course, yeah.
I don't procrastinate. And I've been watching myself in certain things that I don't enjoy. And it's not aligned with what I love.
Yeah.
I procrastinate.
Of course.
So it's aligned with what you're saying. And I love it. Something that contributes also a lot for procrastination is people who are perfectionists, mm-hmm. and also the fear of failure. Mm-hmm. What's your advice for people who are in this situation?
Well, for perfectionists, I'm perfectionist by myself. Mm. For example, this cover of the book, I made the cover by myself because we had 5 graphic designers and I didn't enjoy any of their designs. And I was like, okay, I spent 2 years writing the book and I want the cover somehow reflect my values. And I made it by myself. You have a golden ratio dial. This is even my handwrite. Mm-hmm. I love minimalism. So it's like a lot of white space. So this is a symbol for me because my publisher, he pushed me a lot. Like he was like, you have to choose one of those designs out of those 5. And I was like, no, this is my book. I truly, truly want to have a perfect cover. So I am perfectionist. And I think it's a great gift. But you have to be perfectionist only in things and tasks that are the most important. So, for example, with the book, it's very smart to be a perfectionist. But with an average email, nope. So you have to truly choose like those 80% of your work that it's completely okay to leave unperfect, but you always have to choose those, I don't know, 10 to 20% of tasks that you truly, truly need to focus on and to improve that into a diamond. Like, so for me, it's a huge part of my work to understand what are those diamonds and have the courage to say no to those other tasks and things that can distract you. So this is the most important tool for better time management. It's the courage to say no. Because if you don't have the courage to say no, then you are overwhelmed by priorities of others. When you check your email, how many percent of those emails are about your vision, about your priorities? Only few. Mm-hmm. Most of emails that we are receiving are about priorities of others. And if you don't have the courage to say no, your to-do list is overwhelmed and you are working not on your visions, but on visions of others. So courage to say no, it's crucial for mental health and for productivity.
So it's okay to be a perfectionist, but pick what is important for you. Yeah. Be perfectionist.
Pick those diamonds.
Exactly. Yeah. And the rest, just be a bit more flexible.
Yeah.
So that will help, like at least you are progressing and you are not just trying to be perfect everywhere.
Yeah. And I have a very important idea for this.
Go.
So if you send an email to someone and when he replies you directly, it means that he's not productive at all, because he should be working on something else than to reply your email. So sometimes I don't reply for many days because I'm working on something much more important. So I have a great personal assistant too. So she helps me to be my firewall to those distractions. But again, like for me, emails are not full of my priorities. So sometimes I don't check my email because I'm working on something that is much more meaningful. It's much more important for my mission and vision, and that can help more people than when I spend 3 hours replying emails.
Email is a huge one in terms of time management, procrastination.
Yeah.
It's huge. What's your can you share with us, what's your system in order to better manage email?
Well, I have a story, and that was the moment when I was nearest to the burnout. It was shortly after I published the book. I published the book on time management, so I should be perfect, right? So, and when the book was published, I started to get more and more emails, like 100 plus emails daily. And I am a perfectionist, so I replied all of them because I love to have a zero inbox. So I replied 100. The next day, 110. So I replied 110. I spent 2-3 hours with that. The next day, 120, because the more you reply, the more emails came. So, and slowly I started to feel something like this. I started to feel being anxious. I started to feel that I'm a loser because I wrote a book on procrastination and I was procrastinating my emails, and it was twice painful for me, because I was an expert in productivity and I was unable to be productive. And then I made a very big decision. So I just left to Japan. I just directly left. And I forwarded my email to my colleague. It was, if I didn't do that, I completely burned out back then. So I forwarded the email to my colleague. I went to Japan alone for 1 month. I went back and I had only 10 emails. She said like, oh, you have 10 emails. I was like, what the hell? Like, where is the rest? And it was unimportant. I replayed that. I was like, okay, so now I understand that I truly need a personal assistant. Because to recognize whether the email is important, you have to read it. So even though the email is unimportant, first you have to read it to recognize. And now I have amazing personal assistant. So she basically goes through all my emails. She divided them into what is important, what's not. And those few, that's only like 2-3% of emails that are important.
Wow.
And she forwards those emails into my secret folder.
Mm. Wow, I love that. I think that can help a lot of people.
Like if you are an entrepreneur or freelancer or it's a great investment, because the investment is much lower than the amount of money that you can earn when you don't reply emails 2-3 hours daily.
Really, really good. Well, so you gave a lot of tips for people to overcome procrastination. Now, tell me, what is the most powerful question that people can ask themselves that will help them to also in their journey of procrastination?
Well, I think that the most important question of life is truly like, what are your unique strengths? Because everyone has a set of strengths, but some of them are truly unique. What are your unique strengths, and how you can use those unique strengths to deliver something meaningful to others, how you can change and improve communities that you are part of, how you can maybe slowly change the whole world and pass it to the next generation in a slightly better state. So combination between unique strengths and purpose and meaning together works the best in terms of fighting procrastination, in terms of being in a state of flow. And I have an example of my life and my work. So my unique skill is to simplify complex things. So that's why the book has a lot of pictures, I already told you. So the whole cover is me, like it's simplicity. So I love simplicity. I'm minimalist by myself. And I used minimalism for my thoughts. So I don't like to have a complex, messy thoughts in my brain. So I love to simplify things and make them useful. So this is my like unique skill, ability to simplify. And I use this to deliver value to others. Because when I'm an educator, I can do better talks, better workshops, when everyone can understand that. So simplicity is my skill, unique skill, and the meaning is to help others and to help them to understand their procrastination, for example.
So what is my unique skill? That's the question.
Well, I think that you ask a great questions. Right? So, and I think that I feel that you enjoy the process, right? So you are already in a state of flow.
Yeah.
So, and we discussed that during our preparation call. Yeah. That you find your purpose too. So maybe tell us, like, what do you think that changed you? Now I will ask you, but just one question. So what changed your career to have more purpose in life?
I think I was always looking for that purpose. Uh-huh. And I was asking that deeper question is like, what is my truth? What is my purpose? And uh-huh. even if I was not there, I was always in that direction. Uh-huh. And till now, I am fully living my purpose. And what you're saying, like my unique strength is to connect with people.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And that's how I can feel that.
So purpose gives me the energy, the creativity, and also gives me the power to help others and to impact the world. Yeah.
So basically, we do the same, but we have different skill sets.
Yes.
So that's why we are not competitors. Yes. We can always collaborate when we have similar or same values. And I always say that diversity is important, but not in terms of values. Mm. So if you have a team, you want to have a very diverse team with different skill set, with different backgrounds, because then you can understand complex things, you can innovate quicker. Mm-hmm. But diversity with values is not a good thing when it comes to collaboration. So if we have similar values, then we can collaborate. Yeah. If we have different values, we are also not competitors, because you don't have a mission to help others.
People ask you a lot of questions, but maybe what is one question that not many people ask you and you would love to answer?
So my favorite or my the most desired question is about the prediction of the future. Mm-hmm. And the answer, So the answer is that we will experience tremendous growth because of artificial intelligence. But also there will be huge risks. For example, when some governments use AI for spreading misinformation or use AI to spy their inhabitants. So I think that the future will be both amazing and both terrible. And pace of those changes will be quicker and quicker. So we have to prepare for that. And the more people with ability to have strong missions, visions, values, when we have a lot of strong leaders, we will be capable of survival. If not, well, that's going to be a huge problem. So I think that now we have a short window of time to prepare like maybe few months, few years to prepare for the future era. And as a mankind, we can change everything in a positive manner, or we can mess everything up. And now we have a short time to prepare. Yeah. So this is my prediction, and this is what I'm thinking when I go sleep, and when I'm unable to fall asleep, when I'm jet lagged. So I overthink the future with AI. So, but I think that we can truly do something and increase the chance that we all survive on this planet together, and not to extinct.
Thank you for coming to the show.
Thank you so much.
A pleasure, and good luck on your purpose and your next steps.
And good luck in your purpose and everyone else's purpose. Thank you. Thank you so much.